Okay, so we've been talking a lot about the economy. Of course, the Monetary Policy Committee is expected to increase interest rates by at least another 0.25%. That means your bond is going to cost more. Your car finance is going to cost everything. Your credit card is going to cost more as well. And it's clear that especially the middle class are overextended and becoming more vocal about the pressures on the financial front. We need to not just think, but work our way out of the state that we are in. And joining us on the line is Duma Qobule out in Joburg. He's an economist. Welcome, Duma.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite here.
We were discussing stagflation a little earlier, once thought by economists to be impossible. I guess it was the Keynesian economists in the post-depression kind of stages that thought it was absolutely impossible. It's our reality, is it not?
Yes, so we've got low growth and we've got high inflation. But I should say that our inflation hasn't been as high as in other countries, like in the US and the Eurozone and in the UK and so forth. So they've been affected far more by, for example, in Europe and the UK, by natural gas prices, and which we don't have that exposure. So I do think that the Reserve Bank is doing the wrong thing by increasing interest rates when I think our inflation has peaked, and it's got nothing to do with too much spending in the economy. It's got to do with supply side shocks to the economy that you all know about. The things that are external to us, it's the food prices and it's also the petrol prices. I just have to make that point, is that our country is not growing. We have not grown in per capita terms since 2007. Our GDP per capita in 2022 was lower than it was in 2007. So that is the core of the problem that we have in South Africa, that our economy has not grown and it hasn't recovered from the global financial crisis.
And higher interest rate is going to negatively impact
higher interest rate. You know, reading Sunday Times yesterday, like a bond of $1 million, I think it's the repayment has doubled or whatever like that. So it's taking money out of the people. Eskom has done enough damage to our economy. I don't understand what the Reserve Bank is trying to achieve by further, you know, punishing people. It's like punishing the wrong kid in the classroom, you know.
That was the question this morning. It's macro factors that they're trying to manage in a micro way. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever. If they really want to control the inflation rate, they have to tackle it at source. You know, they must provide us with subsidies for our fuel, and they find a way to, you know, I don't know what's going to happen on the food prices, because the food prices is the main reason why our inflation rate has stayed at about 7% here.
So our issue in South Africa is unemployment. Shouldn't we be throwing everything and the kitchen sink at it?
Yes, you put it right. We've got 11.9 million unemployed people in South Africa. We should be throwing the kitchen sink at the problem, you know? And I don't understand, you know, so there's three things that's happening now. We haven't grown since 2007 in per capita terms. The forecast for the IMF for this year is 0.1%. The forecast from the Reserve Bank for the next 3 years is declining GDP per capita. So by 2025, our economy will not have grown for 18 years. That is not, something will break at some point, you know. And then we've got this problem of youth unemployment of 7 million people who are unemployed 15 to 34. They account for about 60% of the unemployed. And yes, we should throw the kitchen sink at it. So there's three main levers to get our economy growing again.
Tell us what the kitchen sink is, Duma.
The kitchen sink is that the precondition for all of this is that we must get our power stations working again. Eskom must, you know.
Okay, there's no magic wand for that.
Well, yes, there's no magic wand, but the point is we don't have the time. We can't afford another day, another month, or another year of this load shedding. So they have to fix the power stations and get them to work ASAP. That's the precondition for all the things that I'm talking about. Because Eskom it destroys the economy. We can't create jobs and so forth. The second thing is that the Reserve Bank has to stop these interest rate increases. You can't have Eskom on the one side, the Reserve Bank on the other side, you know, pulling the screw, and then you have Treasury on the other side, which is cutting government spending. How do you expect to grow as the government when, you know, you can't expect to grow when those three things are working against you? So we have to relax all those three issues. So I believe that what we need to do, as you said, the kitchen sink. We must have a GDP growth target of 6%. Let me explain. there's a relationship between GDP growth and employment. I calculate it's about 0.9. So every percentage increase in GDP growth, if the economy grows by 1%, employment grows by 0.9%, you know. Mm. So that's how it works here. So that's the first thing we have to do. The second thing we have to do is to have industrial policies to incentivize industries which can absorb people who are not educated. I'm talking about 50% of the unemployed don't have a matric. So we must create the jobs for the profile of the people we have, not the profile we wish we had, you know. And so that's number two. And number three, the people who can't be absorbed through GDP growth and through these industrial incentive policies and incentives for these sectors must be absorbed through social employment programs or public employment programs. So currently we have the expanded public works, which creates about 475,000 full-time equivalent jobs a year. We have the community works program, which creates about 250,000 jobs a year, well, part-time jobs, two days a week, you know. People work and they get $1,100 a month, yeah. And then we've got the presidential stimulus, which was quite a success, although many... there were many problems with the implementation of it, but it was a success, and we created opportunities for more than a million young people. Yeah. But the Treasury has now said we're going to stop that program. So what we should be looking at is to just amalgamate these programs, get them working together, coordinated from the presidency or wherever, and increase the budgeting and financing of these programs. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we got like things that are absolutely sacrosanct, and I think we need to ask the questions, the tough questions, even if we're going to get tarred and feathered. If you are saying the Monetary Policy Committee is not doing right, we've got to ask questions about the Reserve Bank as well. Is inflation targeting in the manner that they're doing it the right thing?
Yeah, it's overkill. You know, it's you know, yeah, it's complete overkill. You know, it's. It's burning down the house to roast the chicken,
yes.
As one famous U.S. economist said back in the day, you know, about 50 years ago. And he was criticizing the U.S. policy on interest rates, you know. And that's what's happening in South Africa. There's no reason for the Reserve Bank to be increasing interest rates. They should be supporting the economy to grow. And the same with National Treasury. They should be supporting the economy to grow as well. Yeah, yeah.
It's privately owned, the Reserve Bank. Where do they get their mandate from?
Well, they should get the mandate from the people, from Parliament, from the democratic mandate. So we, as the South Africans, we must decide what they must do. You know, in the UK, the central bank has people who don't work for the central bank, you know, independent people. So we should have the composition of that Monetary Policy Committee. They must change to reflect the people who understand the plight of ordinary South Africans. So you must have different, yeah.
So mandates don't come from shareholders of the Reserve Bank?
Yeah. So I mean, they decide on their own what they to do, and they're a group of technocrats who work at the bank, and they're oblivious to the real challenges of South Africans.
So the question then is, should the Reserve Bank be privately owned?
Well, you know, yeah, I don't want to go into that debate. I don't think it should be, but I mean, I would rather focus on the mandate of this Reserve Bank.
I'm with you.
Yeah. The mandate, it must be geared towards it. So what we have in South Africa today is the Reserve Bank only cares about inflation, Treasury only cares about debt. So we must say, no, you must care about growth and employment and inflation and, you know, like what happens in the U.S. and most other countries, yeah, many other countries. Yeah.
I'm chatting to Duma Qobule. He's an economist. Join us in Johannesburg to talk about our issues and specifically about creating youth employment. Now, we know that jobs are being created in the small and medium business kind of sector. Nearly missing in action is a department created for this purpose, the Small Business Ministry and Department. Are you seeing any kind of forward-looking, kind of proactive actions to get youth employed? And how do we get youth employed? We know apartheid government used state-owned enterprises to drive skills amongst youth. Why aren't we replicating those kind of things as well?
Yes, I was doing some research recently for an organization called Youth Capital, and we looked at the two periods in terms of our history. From 2003 to 2008, we created 3.1 million jobs. The economy is growing at about 4.5% a year, and the number of unemployed people went down to 28.7%. And the number of unemployed went down by 2 million. And half of those jobs were created for young people. But now, since the fourth quarter of 2018 to the fourth quarter of 2022, the economy creates 1 million jobs. But if you unpack it, 2 million of those jobs went to older people, 35 to 64, while the young people, 15 to 34, they lost 900,000 jobs. So the net job creation was about 1.2 million people. So I don't understand why that is the case. And were employers, was it a very tight labor market and they're looking for more experienced workers? I don't know what it is. And I think we need to do more research. But we have to say, we have to throw the kitchen sink at this problem, you know. And that is what countries have done in other countries that have solved this unemployment problem. Yeah.
So again, what is the kitchen sink? You know, again, what is the kitchen sink?
There's elements of the kitchen sink. So number one, you must get the priorities aligned. Number one, this is the priorities in terms of the growth target. The second thing, I believe in a basic income grant that must be given to people. You know, these people. I'm a big campaigner for the basic income grant. And on Monday, the president actually phoned me and to ask me about. To talk about this issue of the basic income grant, you know, and so we need to provide income support for the people. How are the people supposed to live? The 12 million people who are unemployed. I think South Africans are insensitive. And, you know, we have to, so that's number two. Number three, the government has to start spending money on infrastructure. Our infrastructure is collapsing. I don't know what it's like in Cape Town, but in Johannesburg, I live not far from the city center. It is crumbling. It is a filthy, overcrowded, dangerous, and public health hazard for the people who work there, you know. And I don't see any solution to this without the government investing in its people, because the investment hasn't kept up with the growth of the population. For example, in urban centers, in Johannesburg, it has been growing faster than the country average because of inward migration and migration from people outside South Africa. So that's what we should do. We should invest in infrastructure. The infrastructure pays back for itself. So every rand on infrastructure generates more than 2 rands for the government. So
Duma?
I don't understand. Yeah.
Well, we hear you. Did we hear you say that the president called you?
Yes. I spoke to him on Monday, yes.
And then what do you say? Hey, chief, you the problem.
No. I had to be, you know, the funny thing is that I didn't realize who was speaking on the other side for about three minutes. He was saying, besides bashing me from time to time, how are you doing?
I'm thinking, that's disarming.
And then yes, but anyway.
So is he the problem? Is government the problem? Is that the kitchen sink too?
Yes, government is the problem. And government is the problem because government has got its priorities mixed up. You know, what really depresses me, you listen to Parliament and all the parties debating about issues. This thing of youth unemployment is never discussed. Have we ever had a special debate on youth unemployment in Parliament?
Yes.
No. We should be having a special debate. That is what they should be. People are talking about Lesotho and all the things that are irrelevant to our situation now, Vladimir Putin and all that, you know, but we should be debate. South Africans love being distracted from the core issues that are facing our country. We have to get our country working again. We currently don't have a viable country. We are unviable society. And at some point, you know, this youth unemployment, it's a ticking time bomb, and we're going to have something like the Soweto riots of 1976 or even the Arab Spring that you saw during the early 2010s, you know, in North Africa, because we can't continue like this. We are totally unviable as a society. Yeah.
Let's talk again about macro stuff, if you don't mind. And somebody says we finally, someone talking sense about the Reserve Bank and their stupid narrow interest rate hiking cycle. I want to talk about hegemony and Western-led hegemony in the economic sphere. And to what extent that is serving us. Let's start there.
Yeah. Okay, so now, you know, I went to university in Scotland, in the UK. And, the things I learned at university in Scotland and what I had to unlearn, you know, since then, and I had to look at countries that are really successful, you know, countries like in Asia, you know, the developmental states in Asia, countries on our continent, for example, Rwanda, Ethiopia. And you look, the things they did are not the things that the West say you must do. You know, in Asia,
they're
very polite people. When the West comes and says, do X, Y, Z, they agree. They say, yeah, we're going to do it. And they do the opposite, you know.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, but they do it very politely without fighting with everybody. Yeah. So, and that, yeah. And, you know, I traveled in China quite a lot, and they throw the kitchen sink at this problem.
Yes.
12 million people are coming onto the labor force every year in China. And they have a panic attack, and everything has to gear towards creating those jobs for the 12 million people. In South Africa, between 600 and 700,000 people enter the labor force every year. And the number keeps growing, and the number of jobs we create is a fraction of those 700,000 people are getting into the labor force every year. So we must close that gap. You know, the Treasury likes talking about the hippo between revenue and spending. There's another gap that we have to look at. We have to look at the gap between the 700,000 people enter the labor force and the number of jobs which are created, which is a trickle. Yeah, yeah.
Aduma Tebule, we are so grateful for your time, your insights, and I think you are helping us to look at the issues a little more clearly. It is appreciated, your time this morning. An economist joining us in Joburg to just focus on our economic issues, our economic woes, and he's arguing for a polite pragmatism. Yes, of course. And then do what is necessary for South Africa. And I think there's some merit in that argument.